We're up to Kina test. Okay, I'm doing today Kinois. Everyone have a Kinois in front of them, the art scroll Kinois. We're using the numbering system of the art scroll, which I believe has captured, has dominated the world. See, the one who made a numbering system before them was the Goldschmidt. The Goldschmidt edition has a different numbering system. So they used to have the sheets. In the Goldschmidt edition, it's Kina number 10. In the Art School edition, it's Kina number 8. They used to have these sheets. And in this edition, it's Kina number, there's another edition. Today, that battle is over. That battle is over. Art Scroll 1, no one even bothers giving you any other number than what it says in the Art Scroll. The Art Scroll numbering system has won the day. And you know, it's amazing things that Klal Yisrael, they pick up. They won. All I can tell you is they won, hands down. Anyone that does Kinois will only use one numbering system. Anyone who writes Kinois, like this Sefer, you're not going to convince me that this Sefer wrote when they did their numbering system, they were shamed into using the Art Scroll numbering system. They won the day for 25 years. So that's it. Anyone who makes Kinois now and wants to put a number on a Kino, which is very important, so you know which Kino you're up to, has to use a number. And Meir Zlatowitz, he won. He won. I don't know. You know, I really don't know. I don't know. That's something that you have to do some research on. Exactly. If there ever even was, I don't believe 50 years ago there was such a thing as giving a number to a Kina.
Those pamphlets that they used to have numbers.
Numbers. The first one that was popular, used numbers that was very popular was the Goldschmidt. It's called the Goldschmidt. Mm-hmm. They call it Goldschmidt.
Yeah, had Minig Poilin and Minig whatever it is, and that's it.
No, there's only one minute. There's no difference. Poland and Liga. That's in Slichas.
Kinas.
Kinas is only one. I mean, there are many different. There are other Slichas. Hirsch Weinreb, if you listen to his Kinas, he very much is. Dwells upon the other traditions, the Kinois of Rome, the Kinois of the Svardim. I have a very good safe on the Kinois of the Svardim. I thought I would be very good to prepare. I open it up.
Yeah, Ezra wrote a few Kinois that are not part of this, but Rabbi Katz gave a
speech.
He was talking about one he focused on for a half hour.
Ezra. The Svardim have a completely different set of kinas, completely different. And in fact, they say Eila Eskara. They don't say they say for the Asar Hadugei Malchus, but we say on Yom Kippur. We say Arizeh Halavamain, and they say Eila Eskara. Okay, we'll get to the Asar Hadugei Malchus shortly, but there are 40. We have today. I have a sefer that has compiled 42 kinois on the Asara Harude Malchus. 42. Only two of these 42 are popular. What we say on Tisha B'Av, Arizeh HaLevonon, which is relatively very, very short, and a much longer and elaborate version of Eila Ezkara that is recited on Tisha B'Av. The Svardim only say Eila Ezkara. They don't say Arizeh HaLevonon at all. And then there are 42 of them. It's amazing. And who are the Asara Harugei Malchus? In our version, in our art school, there are only 8. Two of them disappeared. Where did they go? Well, here, some of the new editions have found them. We'll do later. They put it back in this one. But if you look at the 42 kinois, each one of the 42 kinois on the Asara Harugei Malchus list different people, and if you want to take a common denominator, you want to take all of them together, I think there are over like 23 candidates for the Asara Harugei Malchus. Each one of the Mekoyimim had a different tradition as who the Asara Harugei Malchus. You'll ask yourself, why the number 10? Why is that a significant number? So let's say there are 23 Harugei Malchus. There are 6 million Harugei Malchus. I mean, what's the significance of the number to begin with? Obviously, whatever the reason is, there is significance in this number 10. Why? I don't know. I have no idea. There is significance.
You know, try to put it into
the Asar Sadibra is there are 10 Shvatim who participated in the Mechiras Yosef. Yosef was number 10, Yosef himself was 10.
Right.
Here, obviously, there is some Kabbalistic reason why we want to come to a number of 10. And there were so many great people that were murdered, died, were martyred, Kiddush Hashem, and for some reason, there's a significance that this person is part of that magic number 10. Well, I don't know why. That's what it is. So if you go through the 42 keynotes that we have preserved, this Sefer, it seems that this person did a lot of research. He really dug up from the Rishonim. Now, anyone can go, you want to write it, whatever you want to write, you can write. But he produced through his research 42 authentic keynotes that were written by the greatest of the great. You know, a certain era, the time of the Rishonim. The Rishonim maybe even before the Goinim. And in those 42 keynotes, it's amazing they have a different tradition as to who the Asara Harugei Malchus were. And if you put them all together, you have a list of 23 people. Okay, I mean, you would say today, people who died in the Holocaust, you know, why aren't they from the Asara Harugei Malchus? How are they different? Incredible stories of Kiddush Hashem.
It looks like just an example of what they give to us.
It's a sampling of the whole Klal Yisrael, like Eov. It's like Eov. Eov, there's a machlokes, when did Eov live? There's a very big machlokes in the Gemara. Yeah, the Gemara presents a number of opinions. Did he live in the time of Moshe? Did he live in the time of the Avos? Did he live in the time of the Shoftim? There's so many different opinions as to when Eov lived. And some of the Mefarshim say, Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. They were different people. They were different individuals who suffered. And Sefer Eov is a composite of the totality of human suffering. And it was all put together in one Sefer. The Kinois is also a composite. It is a collage. Is that the right word? It's a collection of the tzoros of Klal Yisrael. Let's go to some of the kinos. Kinos on the test. Let's spend some time on this. Kinos on the test is Eichos Sefarti. I'm gonna try to go a little bit quicker because just to cover to touch upon some of the kinos. Eichos Sefarti Mei Ra Asher Sai Hish. So really, we touched upon this yesterday. Rav Kalman said a very good vart. He said a very, very good, profound word that over here we're describing over here the Churban Beis Hamikdash. And the Churban Beis Hamikdash is called, it's called the splendor from my head. And the first time, it's an incredibly absurd word, what Rav Kalman said, is the first time we discovered the Mokoim of the Beis Hamikdash. The first time it was ever discovered was by Yaakov Avinu, according to most of Mefarshim, not everyone. And when did Yaakov Avinu discover this? When he put his head upon this Mokoim. He finished spending 14 years learning Torah in the Beis Medrash of Shem Va'Eder. And he then came to Beis El and he lied down and he surrounded his head with 12 stones, the Shiftei Yisrael, and he went to sleep. And in his dream, in his rest, he saw the Malachi Elokim Oilim B'Yardim Boy on a ladder. He woke up and he said, Manoiro Hamakoyim Hazeh Ein Zekim Beis Elokim Hazeh Shar HaShemayim. And notice in this keynote, all three things, I'm telling you just based on what Kalman said, all three, there's a well-known Chazal, Yisrael, V'Oiraisa, V'Kudsha Brichu, Chatu. That Klal Yisrael, the Torah, and Hashem are all one. Okay, I'm sure everyone heard that many times. Yisrael, the Jewish people, V'Oiraisa, the Torah, V'Kudsha Brichu, and Hashem Chadu. It's all the same, it's all one. It's a very Kabbalistic statement. Okay, Hashem is Hashem. But in our level, they're all intertwined. These three things cannot be separated. This Kina is Rav Kalman that puts all three together. Because here we have, the theme of the Kina is right away presented in the very first words of the fourth line. It's the first stanza. V'nom im bechukosai teilech Moshe, who was the Av HaNeviim, said to the Jewish people in Parashas Bechukosai, if you will only go in the ways of my chukim. Rashi on that pasuk says, im bechukosai teilechu, what do these words mean? Im yihyu amelim b'toyah. That's the pashup shot, the simple translation of these words. Rashi proves it can't mean mitzvahs. If you look at the Rashi, because mitzvahs kvar nemar, the only way we could understand over here the words im bechukosai teilechu, im yihyu amelim, if you will toil in the study of Torah. Yaakov Avinu, he was mekayim the words im bechukosai teilechu. He fulfilled this. He spent 14 years studying Torah in the Beis Medrash of Shem Vo'evah. And what did he do? He traveled to Beisel and rested his head upon the Even HaShasir. His head that has now absorbed the totality of Torah. 14 years learning Torah in the Beis Medrash of Shem Vo'evah, he absorbed the fullness of Torah. He took his head that had all of that knowledge within and made contact with the Even HaShasir B'Mokim HaMeidosh. And what happened at that moment in time? Hashem appeared to him. Hashem Altir Yaakov. Hinei Anochi Imoch Ushmaritich B'Chol Asher Teilech. Hashem appeared to Yaakov, and all three elements came together at that moment in time. He had in his head 14 years of knowledge. He made contact with the Even Shasir, the Mokoim HaMigdash. When he woke up, he said, V'ho Even Hazos, Asher Samti Matziva Yiyye Beis Elokim. And at that moment, when he made contact, Hashem appeared to him. Hashem said, Hinei Anochi Imoch Ushmarticha B'chol Asher Teilech. Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu, V'kudsha B'richu. When we say V'kudsha B'richu, it means Hashem appearing to him where? In the Mokam HaMikdash. Because that's Kibesi based, that's Hashem's Mokam. The Mikdash is, you know, Hashem appearing to Yaakov Avinu on this Mokam is the place of Hashem. This Yisrael, Hashem is appearing to Yaakov Avinu in Hashem's home, where his head is resting on the Even Shasir, and Hashem is appearing to him, and all built on the foundation of Torah, after spending 14 years learning Torah. And here, in this Kina, what we're really doing is, we're reflecting that the Chut HaMeshulosh has unraveled. It has unraveled. These three strands, which create this rope, this Chevel Yaakov, Yaakov Chevel Nachalosai, we mourn that it unraveled. Eicha, how could it be, Sifarti, my glory, which is the Beis HaMikdash, Me'rasho Esai Yishlichu, has been cast off my head. Yaakov Avinu's head was resting on the Even Shasir. It's been taken away, and instead, Uchenegat Kis Yaakov Etzel Namlichu, instead they put in that Mokam, instead of my head, I'm telling you a word based upon Rav Kalman said, instead of my head resting on the Even Shasir, they put there a tselem, a crescent. A crescent, well, the truth is, during the Crusades, I mean, you go to the coast of Amaravi, you go to the coast, the coastal plaza, you go to the tunnels, who built all that stuff? It's magnificent. Magnificent, what's there? Unbelievable. You go to Wilson's Arch, and you go inside here, and there are caves and tunnels and structures, and they go down these massive. Who built that? The Crusaders.
Hordes.
What? Hordes. No, Hordes built the Mikdash. Hordes built was destroyed. What Hordes built, 99% of what Hordes built is gone. There are some remnants. They show you some stones here, and they show you how they never finished it off because the workers were not paid. They were on strike. He died, mm-hmm. and the moment they heard that Hud has died, they were worried who's going to pay us. They quit. So that's why this stone is not finished, because this is where the workers just left the, they left the construction site. When Hud is built, most of it was destroyed. Who came back? Who came back and rebuilt all of a lot of what we see over there? I'm not talking about the Chesel HaMagavi is the only thing that's left from Hordes. I mean, even that's not from Hordes. Even that, what Hordes built is really way, way down. A lot of it was rebuilt later on. But a lot of the things that you see, they were built by the Crusaders, by the Christians. The Christians, when they went on, they were, you know, they were told of 10 Crusades. No one talks about them. The only one they talk about are the first three. Richard the Lionheart. Okay, the one that's romanticized, that's in motion movies is the third crusade.
The one that's Robin,
I mean,
right?
The second, which one? The second or the third? I forgot already. Either the second or the third. Wasn't the Rich in the Lionheart was which crusade? Either the second or the third. That's not even in the Kinnis. The Kinnis make no mention of that. The Kinnis talks about the first crusade. The first crusade was crude relative. The other crusades were all disasters. They were not, they resulted in the loss of life. Let's not lighten any loss of life. But the other crusades didn't really result in very much, but the first three were heavy, and a lot of the things that you see in Yerushalayim were built by the Christians. Okay.
Third crusade.
Richard Lionheart was the third crusade. Go watch the movies. They have a lot of movies about Richard Lionheart. That's what they study. They don't talk about the first crusade, but. So when it says here, and they put you at Selim, so the Selim refers to, I mean, obviously, we like to interpret this in reference to the Kurban Bayis Rishon, and Amon, the son of Menashe, put in the Kodesh HaKodashim at Selim. One of the five things that happened, one of the five things of Tisha B'Av is Hamid at Selim. They put at Selim in the Hegel.
It's true during the Greek time, right?
That also... During the Greek time, they put it right during Hanukkah miracle. But that was during the Bayis Sheni. So you can interpret this from many, many different ways. Okay, uchenegit kisei hakavoid selam himlichu. This occurred many times in the Bayis Rishon, the Bayis Sheni, post Bayis Sheni, the Crusaders. It's all the same. Now the Muslims control the site. So what you're not going to say that what they put there on the Dome of the Rock. And what goes on there is not in the category of a tselem and lichu. It's not a tselem. What's the difference between a tselem and a crescent? It's all the same. They're symbols.
There was no cross in the time of the Greeks, or they didn't have a cross.
It's right. So we call it tselem. Right. Wherever tselem is, it's just
statue.
An idol, a statue. It's a symbol of
an image
of avodah zarah. All different types. So this first opening line over here is coming to really express how that Yaakov is Chevel Nachalos, Yisrael, the Oraisa, the Kodesh Baruch Hu, Chad Hu. This Kina is expressing how they unraveled. They all unraveled.
There is something interesting. Kushan of the Kacheta Evin Shosan Mera Ashotar, with the Shiva under the Meh.
Meh, right. Here it's
and
Meh.
It's Meh. From the Rashotar it took from. May is from.
Nim.
Okay.
From.
Omdot.
He made them from vertical to horizontal. They killed us. The living things are vertical. The dead are horizontal. So what Kalman is saying is that it says about Asher some mit Rashotar. It was vertical, the dots were vertical, it was alive. And the Goyim, what did they do? They killed us.
Shlichu.
They made us flat.
He said that,
horizontal.
Ibn Ezra says on Il Metim, Omdim Chayim, Shochvim Metim.
Omdim is Chayim? The Nikudois.
As a Metim, the Chayim.
When the Nikudois. Is interesting. That's a very cute observation. Things that are vertical are alive. Things that are horizontal represent death. Okay, so this is the basic theme. It goes through many different examples of the Chorban of Klal Yisrael, and it's all based on the end of each, I mean, again, the theme of the Teichacha cannot be emphasized enough in Yiyu Amelin B'Torah. That's the opening words of this kina. Im v'nam im b'chukor sayte leichu. And if that is not observed, fulfilled, achman al-mutzlan, everything unravels. And that's in essence what this kina is doing. It's just depicting different elements of the unraveling of the braid of Torah, Yisrael, v'arais. Yisrael, the Oraisa, the Kutcha Brichu Chatu. Those three, Yisrael, Oraisa, and the Kutcha Brichu, the separation, the unraveling of these three is in essence what is taking place here in this kina. The three, they all go together, and when unfortunately we do not do our part, then obviously the result is the Teichacha, and as you see, the conclusion of each stanza quotes another expression from the Teichacha, which we were warned that if we're not going to do our part, this is what's going to come upon us. Let's now go to Kina Yud. We did Kina Yud yesterday as well, and this I'll just review very quickly. Is the 24 Mishmaris. Rav Kalman told me yesterday, very interesting, is that this Kina Yud is describes the tragedy that came upon the Kohanim. The Kohanim was the Yofi of the Beis Hamikdash. It was their Makom. I used to hear different Darshan. They would say this is a very common theme you hear from people speak on Tisha B'Av is that in time of the time Shabbos Hamikdash Yekayam, the Jewish people had Parnassah. They is an agricultural society. You have land and farming, and you work the land. And that's why Shemitah is such a big issue. Everyone has land. Who does not have land? Shevet Levi. Al-Kain lo yeh le-Levi chelek. Levi does not have any property. Why? Hashem hu nachalosa. Shevet Levi, their role in Klal Yisrael is to serve in the Beis Hamikdash. When the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, so what happens? So the Jewish people, they lost their homeland. So they go to America. And America, they buy a farm. And you go and you have some chickens. And you have some eggs. And you go and you plant some crops. If that doesn't work, you go into high tech. You sit behind the screen the whole day and you type. You just sit and type the whole day behind the screen. You go and you make investments in real estate. No, you move on. If you don't have a farm in Eretz Yisrael, so you go to Europe, you go to Germany, you go to France, you go to Poland, you go to Russia, you go to Alaska, you come to America, and you make a parnasa. Shevet Levi, when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, had nowhere to go. This is their life. All they do the whole day is they serve in the Beis Hamikdash. They prepare, even though they only work twice a year, but the rest of the year they were preparing. They were serving Klal Yisrael in their spiritual pursuits. They were the teachers. They were the dayanim. They were the Klei Kodesh. And when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, they were lost. Their skill set was the Beis Hamikdash. And when there's no Beis Hamikdash, there was no one that felt the pain of loss like Shevet Levi. When a regular member of Klal Yisrael, I remember it was Antar Vidas, there was a worker there. He was a Polak. He was a complicated person. And sometimes he would choose with him. He was a guard. He was one of the custodians there. He lived here. He used to take care of the building. And he said to me, "Yeah, you guys, you don't turn off the lights. You don't do this. You don't care. You're negligent. You know why you guys don't care?" So the guy said to me, "Because if the yeshiva burns down, you'll just go to another yeshiva. What do you care? You'll go down the block. The guy, you pull up. It's Flatbush, Barapah. There's so many yeshivas. So what do you care if you don't turn off the lights or this thing is something is broken, it's dangerous. The coffee machine. You see the smoke coming out of the coffee machine. What do you care? Let the yeshiva burn down. You'll just go to the next yeshiva. You know he's right." He says, you know, what about the people that this is their life? This is all they have. Oh, God says, it's his parnasa. No, it's his parnasa. His parnasa. There's a lot of truth to that. When the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, so for the average Jew, they were oil a regel. They come up once in a while to do a carbon. They come to pay respects. You know, it's a nice like a vacation. You go on a plane, you come to Eretz Yisrael, you go to the Waldorf, and you have a good time. You go touring, and then when it's over, when they start shooting missiles, all of a sudden there's a problem. They're shooting missiles from Gaza. You get on a plane, get out of here, quickly. And what about the people that live in the land? This is all they got. What about the people who live in the Beis Hamikdash? This is their life. They have nowhere to go. This kina, the pain of that, this kina is acute. Because the Kohanim, this is their life. They have nothing else but the Beis Hamikdash. And when we mourn over the Kohanim, the Kohanim here, we're mourning over the Churban that affected the Kohanim. The 24 Mishmaris of the Kohanim came to an end. It's not so simple exactly what happened to the Kohanim. Obviously, they were killed, they were exiled, they suffered. Now we break up this king to 24 parts, and each section at the end of the stanza, it mentions the name of the Mishmar, or the city in which they lived, or a particular Avera for which a particular Mishmar was guilty of, and because of that Avera, they suffered a Churban. Now, Rav Kalman mentioned yesterday, so here's all about the Kohanim. Now, on Tisha B'Av, we're all fasting, and we're wearing sneakers. And if you wouldn't know, if you would come from Mars, and you look at people on Tisha B'Av, you might be mistaken to think that it's Yom Kippur. Right, Yom Kippur. Look, we read the Asara Malchus on Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'Av. So maybe Tisha B'Av, it's really Yom Kippur. If it was Yom Kippur, you know what we would be saying instead of this kina? Emes ma'nedar hoya ha'koyim gogo. B'shor sh'yotze min ha'koyimesh. Mari koyim. On Yom HaKippurim, we have a beautiful piyut. Mari koyim. Emes ma'nedar. Mari koyim. And it's a chaval that on Tisha B'Av, instead of reciting a piyut to describe the yofi of the Kohanim in their service in the Beis HaMikdash, we read Echo Yoshua Chavatzelos HaShoah, the Churban, Tzar of the Kohanim. In the piyut, I don't know what this means, but in the piyut of Emes Maneda, how many times does it say the word Kohen? 23. So there are 23 lines. I mean, the first one, it says the Kohen Gadol, and then it says Mari Kohen. Why 23? Kohen Gadol, right? Chav Gimel. Chav Gimel is Rosh HaTevis. That's an old one. There are 23 times in the Pid it says Kohen. Kineged, the Kohen Gadol, Chav Gimel. In this Kina, there are 24 Mishmaris. It's worse. I mean, the Churban, I don't know what it means, it has any meaning, any significance. But Mare Koyein is 23, and this Kina, we focus on 24 Mishmaris. Now let's go to the next Kina. Kina Yud Aleph. Vayikoyein Yirmiya, I'll come to Yirmiya Yoshua. Everyone will tell you, they always write this, that this is the most important Kina of Tisha B'Av, because the essence of this Kina was composed by Yirmiyahu. In fact, a whole parak in Echa, a whole parak. Which parak is it in Echa? It's the fourth parak. Which parak? I think it's the fourth parak?
Yeah.
The fourth parak of Echa is a eulogy for Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu came so close to bringing Mashiach. Yoshiyahu inherited his malchus from his father Amon, his grandfather Menashe, who were Rishoim Gemurim, terrible wicked people, and they lowered Klal Yisrael to a situation, to a matzav where the ignorance of Torah was astonishing. To the degree where it says that, it's hard to take this literally, they did not know what a Sefer Torah looked like. Is that the thinking literally? I heard different Mepharshim say.
But Jews today don't know what it looks like.
Okay, whatever, but it say that even in the Beis HaMikdash, okay, some of the Mepharshim say you don't take it literally, does not mean take it literally, it just means there was an extreme degree of ignorance. Jewish education. And Yoshiyahu had a stirring in his heart. He was 8 years old when he became the Melech. 8 years later, when he was 16 years old, he was Chozer B'Shuva. And with him, he took the entire Klal Yisrael. He was obviously very charismatic, very powerful, very popular. And he brought the whole Klal show with him. And he got to a point where at the end of his Malchus, he was king for 31 years. Pyro Nechol, down in the south, we spent the whole shiur on this. He wanted to go up north to Ashur, as we learned from Rabbi Yehuda Landi. He wanted to support the Malchus of Ashur, to give it chizit so that it should not fall in the hands of Bavel. He wanted to be Mechazik. And the issue was, should we allow Paru Necho to march through the land? Passage rights. And Yoshiyahu looked in the Torah, and it says, V'nasati shalom baretz, I will not v'loy savor cherev bi'aretz lechem, afil cherev shel shalom. And he understood this to mean that now we're living in good times. Bnei Yisrael, they are following the will of Hashem. We have been chozer b'shuva. We even had inspectors coming to people's homes to make sure that there's no avodah zarah, and therefore we're not going to allow Paro Necho to pass through our land. That was a fatal mistake. And the question is, why didn't he ask the prophet Yirmiyah? If he would have asked Yirmiyah, Yirmiyah would have told him in a moment, in an instant, do not, he would have told him in an instant, let him pass. Why didn't Yoshiyahu, who was a tzaddik, he was the Mashiach Hashem, loikom kamohu, no one, there was never a king in the Jewish people like him. How could it possibly be? It's a very difficult question that he did not ask Yirmiyahu what to do. Why did he take it upon himself? Why did he take it upon himself not to allow Paro Necho to pass through the land? So the Kina tells us, okay, and this I think is a very important point about Jewish leadership. But the Kina says explicitly, okay, let me just find the place over here. Okay, V'loshama lachoizeh. Yoshiyahu did not listen to the Chozer, to Yirmiyah. Lo shuv acharayu. He didn't listen. He refused to listen to Yirmiyahu. Hashem wanted them to pass, ki gzera nigzera l'sachsech mitzrayim b'mitzrayim, that Mitzrayim should go fight and they should die. He did not listen. Why not? Why did he not listen? So the Kina tells, you know why? It's mechatois, sisiras, mizuzois, chazoin, and so see, hechelu levazois. It says, due to the sins of what took place behind closed doors, so avodah zarah, but he doesn't really say that. It says, the chazoin, the vision, and so see is Yirmiyah. Hechelu, did they begin levazois to scorn? Let's go back to the beginning of the king where it says it, which puts it all together. Davak boy chet leitzani hadar. It cleaved to Yoshiyahu, the sin of the leitzani hadar, asher kamu achar hadeles lista. These two parts of the king go together. Kina says here that the people of the generation were called leitzani hadar. And they stood up to do averos behind closed doors. The end of the Kina says, what was the sin? What is the sin of the late Sonei Hador? A late is someone who belittles something that is very important. What was their sin? Their sin was the chazoin ansoisi, the visions of Yirmiyahu, hechelu mevazos. It's like a riddle. the sin of the generation, the sinners will call the late Sonny Hadar. Late, again, late means to belittle a davar choshuv. What was the most choshuv thing that they had? Yirmiyahu Hanavi, the prophet. And how did the Jewish people relate to him? Hechelu, they began live as zois, to scorn, to despise. We know, we mentioned yesterday, that they plucked out the beard. They held him down and they pulled out the hairs on his beard. They attempted to poison Yirmiyahu. They threw Yirmiyahu into a dungeon. Yirmiyahu was despised. By whom? By the people, by the common man. Yoshiyahu, who was a very, very great tzaddik, he wouldn't despise. He wouldn't dare despise. How could he be called the Mashiach Hashem? The Ruach HaPein, the Mashiach Hashem, if he was going to be Levaze, the Navi. Enoch Nami, Yirmiyahu had the greatest respect. Yoshiyahu had the greatest respect for Yirmiyahu. But if the people who you represent have no respect for the Navi, then you don't have a chance. A leader can only succeed in an environment, in a setting, where the people want the leader to succeed. If Yirmiyahu was despised by the people, even if we have a leader like Yoshiyahu, a tzaddik, Ruach Elokeinu, Mashiach Hashem, he's affected. He's affected by the attitude of the Hamoin Am. And if in the eyes of the Hamoin Am, Yirmiyahu is a nobody, he's worthy of being eliminated, of being murdered, and locked up, then Yoshiyahu, with his exalted greatness, will not be able to ask and listen to what Yirmiyahu says. When it comes to Jewish leadership, and the rule is, if you have a leader, you can have a leader that has all of the qualities of leadership. He's charismatic, he's brilliant, he's Yerush Shemayim, that goes first, of course, and he's a Talmud Chacham, and he has every mile going for him. He will never succeed if the people that he is serving do not want him to succeed.
Rabbi, if they were doing tshuva, how could they be despising Yirmiyahu?
Obviously, the teshuva was incomplete. Obviously, it says explicitly, during the time of Yoshio, it says explicitly, they plucked out his beard, they tried to assassinate him.
What?
No, Yeshai wasn't as bad, not nearly. Oh, no, Yirmiyahu was the one they tried to assassinate. They fed him poison.
That was the time, when was that?
Yoshio was 130 years before.
No, I misspoke.
I mean, Yeshayahu.
Yoshiah, right? Yeah. They were doing that when Uzziah was king?
Yes.
Say it again.
He means Yoshiyahu.
Okay. Yoshiyahu and Yirmiyahu lived at the same time.
Yeah, so but they did that, the people did that to Yirmiyahu while he was
king? Yes. Yes.
How
yes.
did they do that? How could he allow it to happen?
That's the only question you have about this world? There are a lot of crimes. Even though they were doing teshuv, it says in the Beferish and the Keen itself, it says the whole Sefer Yirmiyahu, this whole Sefer Yirmiyahu. And it says in the Chazoin and Soisi Heichelu Livazois. The people had no respect. The people had no respect for Yirmiyahu. We have a.
The Avodah Zarah was driven indoors. It was no longer.
Avodah Zarah was not the only thing.
The torturing of him was public. Torturing of Yirmiyahu was public.
That's right.
And yeah, you think to allow that.
It's what it says here in the Kina. Yoshiyahu, he lifted the Jewish people from a state of ignorance to becoming Talmidei Chacham, and they were Choyzer B'Shuvah. He needed more time. It's a process. It's a long process. But at the time of this event, of Pyro Nechol, the Jewish people still were secretly worshipping Avodah Zarah, and were secretly, or not necessarily secretly, publicly, they had no respect for Yirmiyahu.
Well, he was the prophet of gloom and doom. So yeah.
He was the prophet of gloom and doom. He hated his job. He said some very harsh things about himself, Yirmiyahu. And the question, the mystery, this is the biggest mystery of the Chormei Samigdash. Chazal make it pretty clear that if Yoshiyahu would not have died, there would not have been a Chorban. When Yoshiyahu died, the Churban really should have happened at that moment. Had he lived, he would have continued to lift up the Jewish people. There would not have been a Churban. Lekom kamahu. His death, that's why his death is a central theme to Tisha B'Av. Because his death basically is the Churban. When he died, that's it. The Churban now has to happen. He was the only one holding back the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And if he would have lived, there would not have been a Churban. If he would have lived, Hashem delayed it for 22 years because the people appreciated Yoshiyahu at least to some degree. But so what is the biggest mystery? The biggest mystery, they teach children in elementary school, in kindergarten, respect your leaders. Yoshiyahu was a melech. Yirmiyahu was a prophet. A Navi has direct communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why didn't Yoshiyahu listen, ask Yirmiyahu what to do with regard to Paro Necho? Paro Necho sent the message, I want to march through your land. Why didn't Yoshiyahu pick up the phone and call up Yirmiyahu? Yirmiyahu, what should I do? Please ask the Ribbono Shel Olam advice. Should I let him pass through? Should I not let him pass through? How could it be the Mashiach Hashem? The Ruach HaPeinu. How could it be he made such a fatal mistake and did not consult with the Navi Yirmiyahu? How could it possibly be? This is the biggest question of Tisha B'Av. How could it be? So the Kalir tells us the answer. The answer is, you cannot succeed in a setting, in an environment, where the people do not want you to succeed. Lev melech b'yad Hashem, but a king is a reflection of the people whom he serves. And if the people of Klal Yisrael, it says explicitly, the chazoin and soisi, heichelu levazois, they despised Yirmiyahu. The late Sonny Hadar, Asher Kalu Achar Hadelis Listar, they despise Yirmiyahu. If the people have no respect for Yirmiyahu, Yoshiyahu also is lacking in his ability to respect and listen to the advice of the Navi. It says this beferish. Dovak bo chait leitzanei hadar. It cleaved to Yoshiyahu the chait of the leitzanei hadar. What was the chait of the leitzanei hadar? What was their chait? Their chait was chazoin an soisi hechelu levazos. There's a moridik musa haskil in this, for Klal Yisrael. The people, they ask, where are our leaders today? Where are our leaders? How come we don't have, and it's not a nice thing to say, because the leaders will tell you we have the greatest leaders. Okay, you say this in public, they'll kill you, right?
You get the leaders, you
just... What do you mean? What do you mean we have leaders? Well, of course, we have the Gedolei Yisrael right in front of us. Can you imagine go to an Aguda dinner, and you have all the Gedolei, and you say, how come we have no leaders in Klal Yisrael? You sit by an Aguda convention, right? All the Gedolim are sitting there in the dais. We have no leadership in Klal Yisrael. These guys here, they're a bunch of clowns. Woo! They'll kill you on the spot, right?
Yeah.
You can't say that. You can't. But we do acknowledge, I think there is an acknowledgement, is that there's something lacking today in Jewish leadership. No, you don't agree with me.
So the question is, do we get the leaders?
We get the leaders, but it's not the leaders we want. No, I don't think it's we deserve. We get more than we deserve. It's America. In America, you always get more than what you deserve. For good and for bad. You get more, it's the leaders that you want. It's the leaders. If we want leaders, Hashem will give us leaders. You know how we have no leaders? We don't want. We don't want people telling us what to do. We don't
You're
want
talking about the from, even
in from, yeah. Orthodox Jews, us, right here, me, present, coming, included. Do I want someone telling me, you can't have a smartphone? If someone would say to me, you're not allowed to have this, you're usher to have this, you may not possess this.
Well,
I don't want him to be my leader. I don't want him to be my leader. I'm addicted. I can't handle it. A leader tells you what to do, and you do whether you like it or not. And we don't want America. And America is a society of freedom. It's the greatest blessing, and it's the greatest curse. That's the way it is. It's the greatest blessing. And you know, in before America, there was no such thing like this. Freedom. Freedom, I mean, it's incredible. When you see what freedom can lead to, the chutzpah by the guy. I still cannot believe by a game how players can kneel when they sing the national anthem. To me, these people, they should be shot. They should be shot on the spot.
Is there leaders follow?
There are people in this world. You see what's going on on the border. People are literally willing to die to get into this country. Okay, they're willing to die, risk everything, give up their family, their life, to get into this country. And these people are making millions and millions of dollars, covered lechasar davar, and the country that gives you everything that you have, if no in public brazen chutzpah, you kneel, you add your mind, you want to disagree, you have a problem, so this is a democracy, there's a right, there's a way of going about expressing your issues. That's the time and place, and in America, they'll give you whatever, they'll even pay. Give you money to help you protest, to express your grievances. But to express it in such a horrific way, you know, this year I read recently that I was fascinated by this, is that, you know, the NPR, National Public Radio.
Palestinian Radio.
National Public Radio. They get a lot of money. A lot of, in this room over here, you're paying to support this. You're paying to support this. Taxpayer money goes to pay for a significant chunk of their budget.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, $500 million. They get $500 million, National Public Radio. So this, they had a very nice tradition on July 4th for 33 years. I thought it was a very beautiful tradition, 33 years. They read the Declaration of Independence. You're in America. Listen, you're in America. America has given you prosperity, freedom, has given you life. You walk the streets. You don't see soldiers walking around. Eretz Yisrael, wherever you walk, there's a soldier with a machine gun. A young boy who's putting his life on the line for you. When this young boy should either be in yeshiva or should be in college or doing, and he's sitting here with a machine gun and he's a target, wherever you go. You're in America, you don't see that in America. You're living in a land of prosperity, and you have, they have the government. The government takes care of everyone. And they decide, NPR, here, NPR, this year no more. We've gone woke. We will no longer read, we're breaking the tradition. We're not going to read the Declaration of Independence. This year in protest. The Washington Post, very well respected, you know, Washington Post, like, you know, the Spitz, the Ivy League of journalism. And one of the, and they're not embarrassed to publish an editorial to defend the NPR and declare, the time has come for us to declare our independence from the founding fathers. Yeah. It speaks volumes. It speaks volumes. Freedom is no greater blessing. What America has done for Klal Yisrael is just not to even be, not cannot even be evaluated. The ability to be shomer Torah mitzvahs, and this has spread to the whole world. It's unbelievable. But at the same time, what a crazy chutzpah is this? Out of your mind to go do things like this?
The answer is yes, of course.
I was the okay, so
the irony of things is that woman in Russia, a basketball player, she protested the national anthem being sung by the WNBA games, and she knelt when they were singing the national anthem.
Yeah.
Well, now she's captain, but she doesn't have democracy. She's stuck in Russia under their rules. That's irony.
Yeah. I'm not sure I understand that. I'm missing
something.
Like, let's finish up. Okay, Mr. Elman, let's finish up. Unfortunately, when there's too much freedom, it trickles down to us that we don't have leaders because we are so used to freedom. And a leader, it's painful. A leader tells you what to do, and you do it, whether you like it or not. Parents tell children what to do. You're on a choice. And you're going to do this. We need that. We need that. And unfortunately, the conditions in this country do not allow that. We don't allow that. This is found right here, and there's nothing new. This is found in this scheme over here. Yoshiyahu had everything going for him. Everything. Yoshiyahu had the ability to bring Mashiach. There was one problem. The problem was the people that he served, they had contempt for Yirmiyahu. They had contempt. The Leitzoni Hador. The Leitzoni Hador, their hate was Chazoin and Soisi Hichedu Levazos. They despised him. Yirmiyahu now had a very dangerous situation. Paranuchal wants to enter the land. What should he do? The logical thing to do is to ask the Navi, Yirmiyahu. And Yoshiyahu, with all of his righteousness, couldn't do that. Why not? Davak boy chait leitzane hador. If the people that you serve do not want you to succeed, you will not succeed. You will not. If the people do not have respect for Yirmiyahu, the Melech, with all of his righteousness, it's going to rub off on him. And he's also going to lack respect for Yirmiyahu. And this is what it says in the Kina. And what's the Musar Haskil? If we want our leaders to succeed and make decisions that will bring Geula, bring benefit, we have to root for them. We have to give them the power. We have to give them the power and give them the respect and give them the obedience, pledge our obedience to them. Then when the leaders, when we are supporting our leaders, then Hashem gives us leaders who have siyata d'shmaya to make the right decision. If Klal Yisrael would have supported Yirmiyahu, if they would have supported Yirmiyahu, then Yoshiyahu would also support Yirmiyahu. And it would be a different Klal Yisrael today. You cannot succeed in a place where the people you serve do not want you to succeed. Rabbi Yesk used to tell me, there's a Rav who got voted in by one vote.
The problem is Leitzanut. Leitzanut achat me'abedet tochachot tarbeh. It says, it doesn't matter how many nevuot you can say. One joke about
excellent.
Just with a hand, it's enough.
Word of Leitzanus can cancel.
The same thing. What do you know?
And who's the one that's the cause of that Klal Yisrael? Our leaders cannot help us if we don't want to be helped.
Moshav Leitzim lo yashav. Lo enshaim. Leitzim.
Excellent. One word of Leitzanus can destroy many words of Musa rebuke. All right, let's go. Rabbi Yossi once told me it's a very true look. Yeah, you know, they have Rabbanim, they, you know, many shuls, they have to be voted in. The tzibur has to want. That's the way it has to be. Okay, it's a democracy. Many shuls is a democracy, and they need to vote. So there was a Rav, and the way the constitution of the shul is set up is you need a majority, 51%. And the Rav got in by one vote. The next day, the Rav quit. Why did he quit? Yeah, I got in by one vote, but I can't be an effective leader. If 49% of the people in this shul don't want me, I cannot succeed in a place where the people here do not want me to succeed. 49, I know, there are different times of 49%. Some of them just means, you know, I like someone, but now that you're the rabbi, I love you. Okay. That's a different type of story. But many times, there are many, many times when people vote, they mean, no. It's my way or the highway. It's you or me. And if you win, I'll fight you to the end. I cannot be a rabbi in a shul where 49% of the congregants do not want me to succeed. Even though I know of a shul in Lakewood where it's a new shul, and young people, all young married people, they all moved in and in the development, and it came time to take a rabbi. And they don't know Benjamin small what to do about getting a rabbi. How hard they know they need a rabbi, at least that they know. But that's a pretty big madrega. you need a rabbi.
They don't want a rabbi.
No, so they know all came, they need a rabbi. So they were smart. And they said, we don't know anything. We don't know what kind of rabbi we need. We don't know, should we get an older person, a younger person, this, that. Let's ask people who know. Let's consult with the Gedolei Yisrael. They should give us advice. How to go about getting a rabbi. What kind of rabbi? A modern rabbi, a Haredi rabbi, a rabbi that's a Dayan, a rabbi that has a good personality. What should we do? So they went to, I don't know who they went to, they went to Vimido, and they told them what they told them, and one of the things that they told them, the experts, when you vote, you can have, you take out candidates, people should be, the people must like the rabbi. And all these things that they should like who the rabbi is, and you should take a vote, and the mark to win, to be accepted, must be 80%. 80%. Not 51%, not 60, not 70.
A supermajority. 80,
what's called a supermajority. You can say 66% supermajority. They told them 80%. And they said, why 80%? All the reason why, because in Lakewood, it's not going to happen in this community and you're going to throw them out so fast. It's not going to happen so fast, even because in Lakewood, Balabatim don't throw out rabbis. Baruch Hashem, it's a different type of community. You don't hear that when the Balabatim in the community don't like the rabbi, they throw him out. He'll end up being the rabbi here for a long time. And if you don't, the rabbi actually died. He died young, the rabbi. He got sick, he died. Very trashy. But 80, you need 80%. Why? Because he says, that's how it is here. You don't hear stories here of people, and he'll be around, and that means the people have to like for real. Because if you're gonna have a significant number of people who do not like this the rabbi that you're selecting, it's gonna be a disaster. He's not gonna be able to succeed in helping the people, elevating them and serving them, unless the people really like him. And if you're going to have, if you have a shul, you know, in America, where, okay, every year or 2 years, the contract's up for renewal, so then the rabbi disposes of all. But here, over here, it's a shanda, it's going to be a disaster. So 80%. It's interesting. It's an interesting idea. I was very surprised when I heard that, 80%. It was such a high number. And it happened, they took a rabbi.
After 1 year of him being a rabbi, it might go down to 50.
Okay, it's always like that. People get divorced, right? You go meet a girl, you get married, and all of a sudden, what do you mean? I went to the wedding, they were dancing away the whole night. What happened? You can't listen, that you don't know what's going to be. But if you're starting out at 51%, okay, it's not so good. Nothing you can do. Okay, let's go to the next keynote, running out of time. Erkan, you want to say something? Erkan, you want to say something? Say something about one word of late sentence can destroy the Tzadik Masabi. Ali, we did already, I'm not going to go. Ali is a very frightening keynote because Ali deals with the most terrible acute. This is the keynote of chutzpah, I think. Klal Yisrael says to Hashem the most horrific accusations. You read this kina, what in the world is, who wrote this kina? How dare you write these words? You say to Hashem, you say, V'nihiye, so you Hashem were like a shepherd, v'otia, veiled in a cloak, v'ra'ashta, v'ra'ganta, and you stormed at us, and you grumbled, v'ata malifo, and you Hashem said to us, what am I doing here? I'm getting out of here. We accuse Hashem of being like a disgruntled employee, in essence. That's what it says over there. We're accusing Hashem, you have been to us as a disgruntled employee. Look at the next one. V'nihyeisu, Hashem, you know what you're like? You're like a bird, like a pigeon on the roof that's lost. V'nihyeisu kitzipor bodeh, a lost bird, al-gog, marvit sareach. Screaming and crying, you lost your bearings. Hashem, you're like a lost bird. That's how you talk to Hashem. Look at the next one. Vin, this is really off the charts. Vin Yesa Kisoinei Vitsar. Hashem, you are our enemy. You're an enemy. You're a soine and you're a tsar. Okay, next one. V'nihiyesav ki gibar lo yuchal lo hashia. Hashem, you're a gibar, but you can't do anything. You're a weakling. It goes on and on. What in the world is going on here?
This is a kina.
Who could talk like this? Who could say such words? How could you make such accusations against Hashem? The answer is, there are two words here. The first, the opening, this is Parashas Devarim. It's the first two words of this. The first word, the last word. I didn't even realize that. It's the first and the last word of the first of the first opening line. Ohali, my tent, v'roganta. This week's parasha. Vateraginu v'ohalechem. Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Meraglim came back, he says to the Jewish people, Vateraginu v'ohalechem. Last word of this stanza and the first word of this stanza. You complained in your tents. What did you say? You said words. Ilmole mikro kasuv. E.F. Shalomra. Possibly the most horrific pasuk in the entire Torah. Chamishe chum shiter. What did Moshe Rabbeinu, when this is parasha, say about Moshe says what you did, Kali Yisrael did? Besinas Hashem oisanu hotzi anu mi Mitzrayim, to give us over to the Amorim to die. Moshe said to Klal, you know what you said? You said that Hashem hates us. He has a hatred for the Jewish people and took us out of Egypt just for the purpose, for the pleasure of delivering us into the hands of the Amorim and being slaughtered by them. Ilmale mikro kasov ef shel amar, to say such a thing. That the Klal Yisrael, at the time when the Meraglim returned, said about Hashem that he hates us, and he took us out of Egypt just for the purpose of killing us. Could you imagine such a thing? Is there any pasuk in the Torah that is a greater apikorsis? Hashem hates us. So Rashi right away jumps into this pasuk and he says, Moshul Hedyot, the truth is, you are the ones who hate Hashem. And it's a mashal hayyid that a person who has a hatred for someone else says about the other person what you think about them. When Reuven hates Shimon, so what does Reuven say? Shimon hates me. It's a lie, an outright fraud.
Projection.
You project upon other people what you think about someone else. When it was a Freudian slip. When you said about Hashem that he hates us, you know what you were saying? You hate Hashem. That's the truth. That is the most powerful
musa. You have to feel so beholden for everything you did. That's
you feel beholden. What favor did I do? Why does he hate me so much? What favor did I do for him lately? So this kina, you know what the emes is? Each one of these accusations is really an accusation against us. We are the lost bird on the roof that's screaming, Margaret, we're lost. We're the enemy of ourselves. We are the shepherd, the disgruntled employee. We are the soine v'tzar, not Hashem. This kina, the fact that it begins with ohali and ends with the word the first word, the verog ganta, clearly is alluding to vateragna v'oholeichem. You complained in your tents with the words besinas Hashem oisanu, Hashem hates us. And Rashi says, Hashem doesn't hate you. You are the ones who hate. And you're projecting upon Hashem what you feel towards Hashem. Thus, this kina, all of these nasty, horrific words of accusations against Hashem is really an accusation against us. We are the guilty ones.
Okay. I want to send the pursuit. She said, but if a woman live at a moon, Shlacha, Hashem, the family, Yachteru, and with the Arabs. It's not so. It came from Moshe, from Hashem. Shlach Lecha, Hashem, and Bata Rotze, Shlach. And here it says, in Parashah, you asked to send Maharidim. And now I understand
why. On top of that!
Why the result was. Because it's from the beginning. It's
from the very beginning it was low. Yeah, of course. From the very beginning it was no good. Okay, now everybody said I want to continue a little bit more, but you want to take a break or should just go straight?
Break.
What? Yeah. Okay, I'll take a short break now. Okay, then we'll continue. We'll continue. You know, we'll talk a little about Shabbos. Or something. We'll continue a few more kinas, and then we'll talk a little bit about Shabbos.
Shabbos.